Here we go then. Welcome to a very festive Under the Abbey stand, the last episode before Christmas Day. And what more could you want waiting for you under the tree than a lower mid-table points per game ratio? I'm Julian Roberts. I'll be your host taking you through the not very, very merry result at the Abbey yesterday against Rotherham and looking ahead to a tricky Boxing Day fixture at Wickham. I'm delighted to have a panel with me as usual. Firstly, making his second appearance on the pod in just a matter of weeks, it's the Christmas spirit of Matt Caspall. How are you, mate? And how are you going to tackle the tricky second appearance?
Yeah, second appearance is tough. Hey, I'm good. I've got a bit of a sore head after last night, though. Big celebration at my getting promoted from Moosenet Division 3 to Division 4 to Division 3.
And that really is the biggest news of the pod as well. Huge. I can't believe I missed out on the running order.
It's not the running order, but what made it all the sweeter is that I've left Tom Walker behind in Div 4 as well. So sum that up, Tom.
And there he is on the Zoom call, looking sullen as ever. The UTAS Grinch, Tom Walker's here as well. Nice to see you, mate. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Tom, before talking about your Moosenet failures. If you had to get one member of the United squad in a secret Santa, who would it be, and what would you get him?
It's a tough one, Matt. I'd say Joe Ironside, and I don't know. I'd probably just get him something pretty standard, like, I don't know,
a referee's whistle or something,
something like that, or just a big referee's whistle and just a big muscle outfits or something like that. I'm not very good at Secret Santa. I'm not creative enough.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Well, listen, let's get straight into yesterday's game. It feels like a really tough one to sort of analyze this one. There's sort of like a really fine line, I think, between being a bit too critical because you're playing top of the league and they were unbeaten in 20 games going into it, and then just giving a bit too much praise just because we worked hard and sort of, you know, matched or, you know, played a decent side and matched them. But then points-wise, it's another zero. So sort of having slept on it, Tom, we'll start with you. How are you feeling about it?
I think kind of sum it up well, really. We were obviously talking as we were leaving the ground, and it really is a hard one to it's a really hard one to analyze kind of well, I think, because there's, on the one hand, you've got the concern that you kind of come across a bit of a happy clapping, just happy to be there, happy to take part sort of fan. Then on the other hand, you know, you don't want to be too critical because, you know, for the while, well, as the table suggests, they weren't the best side in the league. And just like countless other occasions against that sort of team this season, that sort of calibre of side, with for long periods of the game competed. But first half specifically, there are a couple of moments where if we maybe been a bit more clinical, then we could be going in 2-3-0 up. I think Dunk got away on the left-hand side a couple of times, and I'm sure we'll come on to the final ball was lacking a little bit. Sorry, Sam Smith, but you had another good chance to sort of go through on goal, against Rotherham there as well. And the first touch let him down and nearly ended up getting himself sent off. So, I think it's kind of another one of those afternoons at the office where it's hard to be really critical. But, yeah, the end result is the same as if they'd come and rolled us over 5-0 because we got nothing out of it. So, I think a tough one to summarise.
It is, isn't it? Caspar, where's your head at with it?
Yeah, I mean, I took quite a lot of heart from it, to be honest. I will disclose I was watching it from home on iFollow, being the part-timer that I am. And it gives you obviously a slightly different perspective, I think, than I would say I'd normally get from the NRE, partly because I'm very short as well. And to be honest, I took quite a lot away from it. And I think we more than matched them in the first half for sure. And even in the start of the second half, I thought we competed really well. Maybe I'm slightly on, if Tom's next to that fence of not wanting to say like we're lucky to be here, then maybe I'm slightly on the other side of it and say, we do just need to remember where we've come from and how far we've come along. And also just to accept that because of the way the squad is at the moment and the injuries we've got, I don't think we're far away from being a really solid mid-table team in this division. I think if you put Jones back in that side and you slide Iredale across to the left back position, and even if you're able to shore things up with Liam O'Neill, dare I say, then actually what you've got there is a really competitive team. Obviously no Wes Houlihan as well. So when you think about all of that and you look at who we had on the bench left over, and all of the praise we've got from the Rotherham fans and the manager as well, then to be honest, I think we can take a lot away from it. I read on the message board after the game, we've taken nothing from the game. And I think it's just way too oversimplified to say that, because what I would say we can take from the game is quite a few things. Quite a few players had really strong performances. I'm sure we'll pick them out later on as well. But also from Rotherham, just to play against them in that game, that was a proper demonstration of how you go and win an away game in League One. I don't think they did anything flashy or spectacular. They were just very functional. They were very good at what they did. They got the goal and then they sort of closed the game down really well as well. There's a huge amount to take from that game. No, it's not a point. Yes, our goal difference obviously regresses by one, and all of this could be really important for us this season. But I still think there's a lot to take from that and a lot of optimism to take away from that. If we play like that against some of the other teams around us, then you're going to get more sort of Cheltenham results than you are like we've had in this sort of last 8 weeks, which has been very difficult for us.
It feels a lot like a sort of mirror image of the chat we had after Charlton, and even more so. I mean, Rotherham are bringing Will Grigg off the bench. That's the indication of the sort of quality and caliber they've got just on the bench, even. And you're absolutely right to bring up the injuries. I think that's an important thing to talk about. With no Wes, no Tracy, even, you didn't mention, like, these players all change games, right? And I think There's something to be said for the fact that this pod is going to sound a little bit critical, in the sense that obviously we're analysing a defeat, so it's not going to be full of praise, right? We're going to analyse things that went wrong. But a lot of that criticism comes from that place that you said, Casper. We're a decent mid-table side, I think, deep down. Like, we can consider ourselves a decent side. But to start sort of picking apart things, I think something that really stood out for me yesterday, Tom, was the final ball, as you mentioned. It just seemed the whole game, we managed to get ourselves in decent positions, win free kicks in decent areas, win corners, long throws. And I can't think of one header that Joe Ironside got to attack in the box that we put in a decent spot. The three times down the left that Dunk and Brophy combined really well, and it all ended up in nothing. Is that a big factor for you, do you think, in not getting anything from the game?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, right? I guess you can say it's encouraging that we're getting in those positions. So I think there maybe was a sense sort of earlier in the season that, you know, even sort of chance creation is, you know, a chance to make a chance, you know, getting those positions, it was proving quite difficult. And, you know, touch wood, that's something that we're sort of, you know, getting over now and sort of learning how to create chances, particularly against some of these better teams. Obviously, we talked at length about the Charlton game, how many opportunities we had there to, you know, at least get on the score sheet. But, yeah, I mean, it's clearly when you're actually watching the game in sort of real time, it's intensely frustrating, because the amount of times they sort of got behind the right, I think Rotherham might have played sort of with sort of three at the back, but the amount of times they actually get behind the right hand side and it was either Dunk or Brophy sort of going into the box, and you're thinking, just cut it back, try and pick somebody out, and it just sort of got blasted straight through the face of the goal for a throw in. Obviously, that's a real frustration. Second half, I don't think we test the keeper at all. I might be forgetting something. There are a couple of opportunities where I think Weir got away, could have got a shot away, sort of skied it. There are a couple of times I remember we getting sort of flashed across the face of goal, but nobody's there to kind of get on the end of it. And obviously, in the heat of the moment, that's really frustrating. And that was something that was kind of grinding on me a little bit during the game yesterday. But as you kind of sit back and look at it now, if we're saying that the reason we've lost to Rotherham is because we don't quite have the quality going forward that they do, that sort of end product of people like Will Grigg, people like Smith, who I think is still the top goal scorer in the division, people like Nadapo, guys like that sort of threaded throughout the team. And if you're saying the reason that we're losing games like that is because we don't quite have that caliber of player in our team, then I'm probably okay with it. I can kind of accept that that's kind of where we're at and that's our position as a football club in League One. So yeah, it's obviously frustrating, but I think, you know, let's roll the clock back 6 months and what do we expect from a League One season, and what did we, you know, what can we realistically, what can we realistically expect from a Cambridge United team in League One? And ultimately, it's going to be hard work and it's going to have to compete well, hang in games at times. And we knew from the off that there's going to be teams in this division that we play against, and on days they might roll us over. It's happened once or twice, probably not as much as we expected. We've competed for the most part, but if it's a bit of quality that's letting us down in the final third, then it is what it is, hopefully a bottom half League Two team.
Another thing that I think that yesterday really sort of shone through for me, or like hammered home, if anything, is last week on the pod we talked about Wes Houlihan and should he play if he's fit, and we sort of have come to the conclusion a number of times this season that he's our best footballer if he plays. If he's fit, he plays. And you can argue that either way, but for me yesterday was a pretty stark example of he is that little bit of quality that finds a chance. At some point he creates one or two other chances, and it's that difference that could be the difference between a point and 0 points. I wonder, Casper, do you agree with that? Or do you think their game plan sort of would have marked him out of the game anyway, let's say?
It's a funny one, isn't it? So I know I've spoken with you guys about this one before, both on the pod and off the pod, actually. And it's great having Wes. I'll get all the caveats out of the way. He's an amazing footballer. He's probably the most sort of naturally talented footballer I've ever seen play for Cambridge United in the sort of 20-odd years that I've been watching the U's. And he did some amazing stuff last season. And this season, he's getting a lot of praise from opposition fans as well. So when he played up at Rotherham, they were full of praise for him. I think they pretty much gave him a standing ovation when he actually went off the pitch. However,
here we go.
Well, it's as much a system thing. I think to accommodate Wes in our side requires a bit of a change of the whole shape of the team from what we have currently. So I think yesterday, to answer the question direct, I think if you put him directly into that team, you're probably losing Jensen Weir in that example. And Weir did a huge amount of work to move the ball from behind our halfway line right up to the edge of their box. He was probably one of our standout players yesterday. He really looked to pick up the ball and be positive every single time. And the issue we have with Wes at the moment is partly to do with Liam O'Neill in my mind. So when Wes starts, we have to play Adam May deep. When we play May deep, he does not perform very well. We do not get the best out of him when he's in that pivot. That's not where he needs to be on a football pitch. He needs to be way higher on the pitch, creating chances and scoring goals, which we know he can, and he's developing really well. And then the issue comes, and some of the goals we've conceded earlier in the season with Wes on the pitch have slightly come. It's not really Wes's fault direct, but the shape means that May is sat deep. And it means that actually you've got May and sometimes Smith next to each other doing a defensive job, which is what happened at Rotherham. But it didn't happen. I don't think it happened particularly well. And that's kind of where we have a bit of a sort of Wes question. It's not about Wes's ability or his talent or even his fitness. It's just about, if you're going to start Wes, how do you get him in the side without disrupting what we do defensively as a unit, I think. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see how that lands.
Because it'll be interesting, especially because last season, obviously, Bonner found a way to bring Wes into a system, right, shifting to that diamond and finding that system that accommodates Wes without sacrificing too much in the other direction. Anyway, look, we could talk about Wes Houlihan for 40 minutes. So let's leave the Wes conundrum to one side and talk about players that actually played yesterday. And two that I want to highlight is the left-hand side, as we've briefly mentioned, Brophy and Dunk combining really well. I mean, there's a couple of things. It's a left-hand side, firstly, that doesn't seem to have a right foot at all. Tom, yesterday you were saying that, I mean, it must just be like a prosthetic right foot that like flies off if they ever try and kick the ball with it. But as an actual question, we had a question in from CUHD on, it's a very catchy name, on Twitter. And the question is the Brophy agenda justified? Tom, wonder what your thoughts were on that.
No, not at all. It's probably not just Cambridge fans, probably football fans in general, but there is a tendency to just pick out a player and they just get stick, regardless whether they play well, they play badly, they play somewhere in the middle. And unfortunately with James Brophy, I think he's that guy for a lot of people this season. I'm not going to sit and pretend that he's played brilliantly every time that he's put on the shirt this season, because there's clearly been games where he hasn't quite been up to the required standard. But if I think of specifically those games, it's like Milton Keynes away, where everyone was terrible. All right, he maybe embodied that a bit more than others, but he seems to have taken the brunt from a lot of poor performances on the day, like Milton Keynes, for example. But yeah, I think for a player in a team, in a situation that we're in, he just sort of gets us up the pitch. Like every time he gets the ball, his ability to travel with it is so important. You know, you go from sort of defending on the edge of your box to almost be able to sort of launch an attack, basically. And I mean, how many times is it the case that he'll run sort of past the halfway line and end up sort of right down by the byline? And I know it frustrates people that maybe might check back, or he does check back, and try and find somebody else to kind of deliver the ball in. But I think that on its own is such a useful asset in a team that is ultimately going to be under pressure, particularly in these games at Rotherham. But again, I suppose it comes down to the question of what can you expect from a player that came to United sign in League One? Because the simple fact of the matter is, if James Brophy could finish and he had brilliant end product, say seven times out of 10, he wouldn't be playing for us. He'd be playing for someone much better, probably not even in this league. And like, I guess we've just got to accept the fact that because of the sort of disparity of budgets, the disparity of the size of clubs in this league, like we're not going to probably be able to go out and sign players who can produce that bit of end product all the time. We might get them now and again on loan and stuff like that. But guys like James Brophy can be sort of fairly consistent performers. The end product lets him down from time to time, but then, you know, there's occasions where he'll do like a back heel in the box and set up giant eye for his hat trick, like away at Cheltenham. I think that's basically absolutely fine. And I think to be honest, I'd probably go a little bit further than that. I think the last sort of 6-7 games, I think he's actually played pretty well and he's contributed very effectively to quite a lot of the stuff that we've done going forward. So I think I've been going to football long enough now, and I've been sort of hearing the sort of chat around Cambridge United long enough to know that, like I say, it's probably not just us, but as a fan base, there is a tendency to scapegoat players. Luckily, Liam O'Neill's managed to shake that one, I think, by now. But I'm not so sure about that, mate. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like it's just a good point, though, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
This is like take it away from James Brophy. Look at someone like O'Neill, who for long periods just was that guy out, you know, outright the sort of fool guy for any bad things that happened at the football club, it seemed. And he has to like go through a promotion, score like a 30-yard rocket away at Port Vale to like get us up, score a goal on the last day of the season that basically seals promotion for us. And there's still people that won't give him the credit that he basically deserves. So I feel a bit for James Brophy in that, because that might be a tag that's quite hard to shift. And yeah. You know, there's some people that, you know, that will be of the opinion that might be listening to this, might be thinking, what on earth am I talking about? But I think most people would look at James Brophy and think this is a pretty decent player who's done okay this season. There's parts of the games that can improve, there's parts of things that he's done well. And I think if he keeps playing like this, it's okay, basically.
Especially the past month, he really has come on. His performances have come on leaps and bounds since, I want to say, sort of like Shrewsbury, not that game, but since that sort of period, since end of October, he really has become a much better player. And there's been some good chat on the Under the Abbey Stand Twitter page, which is at Abbey Stand Pod. Thanks for all your questions and all the chat on there. And Troy and Joe just made a couple of sort of similar points in reply to the question, which was he does a lot of ball carrying, but his end product is questionable, as you said. And Brophy always loses the ball, breaks up play well, but in the final third, he loses the ball. And I can sort of see that frustration. Casper, I wonder whether you agree with Tom, or if you're somewhere a bit closer to Joe and Troy.
No, I pretty much agree with Tom, spot on. What I would say to people who are saying that on Twitter is, to lose the ball, you have to have it. I would much rather have a winger who's very involved in the game, making stuff happen, which Brophy does. Brophy's always in the game. It's very rare that he's not at all in the game. And if he is, then it's like an MK away where no one's really on the pitch for us properly. Brophy's always involved. He carries the ball well. I have been critical of him earlier in the season, I'll be honest, but in the last sort of 4-6 weeks or so, he's really turned it up. I think he kind of typifies a little bit the whole United team in the last 4 to 6 weeks or so. I just think we're playing with a little bit more freedom and a little bit more courage as well. So where before it was maybe cutting back inside and we weren't committing as many bodies forward, yesterday, people were getting around him. You know, he had to hold onto the ball for a while, but in the first half, he had a couple of little interplays with Harrison Dunk. And as you say, the final ball, not quite there. But again, the final ball thing is funny. There's two sides to a final ball. There's the player playing the ball, and then there's what's going on in the box. And I actually think partly our issue with final ball is around specifically like who's making that front post run? Dare I say it? Where's your Paul Mullen? Which feels horrible to say, but you see my point, right? Everyone they want to see a winger skin their man as a classic. Even if they're standing still, they still expect them to be able to sprint past this guy, which we all, if you've played any football, you know is incredibly difficult. If you're on a sprint, it's great. You can maybe get past someone. And then they want to see them whip the ball early. But all of that also requires for someone to be in the box. This isn't really a slight on Joe Ironside or Sam Smith, but that isn't going to happen when Brophy sets off down his own down the wing. There's not going to be players in the box for him to cross the ball to, which is why I think he ends up holding on to it. This, again, kind of taps back into the squad and the injuries, because if you've got Jones, then you've got Iredale around Brophy. And I think, no offence to Dunk, actually he had a really good game yesterday, but if Iredale's around Brophy, then I think between the two of them, they're actually going to create some really good stuff. Iredale might be getting himself a few more goals like he did last season. And actually suddenly then maybe, hopefully, the Brophy narrative will change.
It's one of them sort of domino effects thing. I think you've pretty much nailed it between the two of you. Let's move on to a couple other specific incidences from the game. And Caswell, I'll stay with you because I think you'd have had a much better view of this on the TV rather than at the ground itself, which is Smith's chance. This, again, I said earlier, this feels like a mirror pod to last week's at Charlton. And we spent a long time talking about Sam Smith waking up with cold sweat after his missed chance at Charlton. And I have a feeling he'll be doing the same thing after missing that chance yesterday as well. What do you think? And also, where do you stand on the red card? Because in the ground, it looked like a 50-50 where the ball was there to be won. But I've heard a few people say he was quite lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kick off with the red card. For me, no. I actually don't think he's made any contact with goalkeeper. I think he sort of played the ball into the keeper and it's all a bit of a mess. I've never been a goalkeeper, but I imagine it's just a scary moment, to be honest. I think he's probably overreacted afterwards, but diving face first into a bloke, sort of, all you can see is his stunt is probably not a great moment. So I'm not actually surprised if you kind of spin off from that. But I do think there was a bit of overacting, which I guess kind of makes sense. They are top of the league and they did sort of work the system a little bit yesterday. Same thing I said to you guys on the messages. He should have been sent off for his first touch, not for the challenge. I think it's just that's let him down. For a technically really strong footballer, which I think he is one of our strongest technical players, I think he needs to work on that right foot a little bit, in the same way we're saying Brophy Dunk, maybe not so strong on their weaker foot as well. Same with Smith. It's the touch that's let him down. It's not the finish. He didn't have the opportunity to finish. I think the ones at Charlton he did pretty well with, to be honest. I think the one that he put past the post, he was being fouled and the keeper's made a really good save from the other one and closed down the angles. He does remind me a little bit of a striker we had a long time ago, Jermaine Easter. So Jermaine Easter had a bit of a reputation. He scored a lot of goals, but he also missed a lot of chances. And I'm thinking specifically back to Cheltenham away the other week. That chance that Smith had in the first half was pretty fundamental. Like you should score there. Like he should actually just be burying that. Fair play to him. He rallied and came back and he got another goal. And I just think I worry for him that he might develop a bit of a hoodoo around this. But for me, not a red card. I wish he'd taken a better touch because I think he's got the ability from there to probably finish. And I think it's one of those games where taking the lead would have been a massive advantage in that game. So
frustrating as well, because I think it's one of them. Smith, unless I've completely misread it, and I might have, I always think of Smith's touch as like one of his best qualities. Like he's always got a decent touch and he's really good at bringing the ball down. So like for him to, I'd expect him to sort of just piss it wide or something rather than take such a poor touch. But look, to use a football cliche, he's a striker and he's getting in the right positions and he's creating chances for either for himself or he's getting, you know, he's in these goal scoring opportunities regularly every game. So you'd hope that he's got that bit of a streaky confidence player to him, right? Like once he scores one, he'll score a couple in a row. So maybe it's a little sort of monkey he needs to get off his back. Another big moment from yesterday, well, probably the biggest, Tom was their goal. From the moment he picked the ball up, we were just saying to each other, foul him, foul him, foul him, foul him, foul him, foul him, foul him. Oh, we scored. It was one of them. You could see it from a million miles away. And Weir does his best on the halfway line. I've watched it back and he does his best. But I honestly think it, defending is a tough thing to analyse, but in that situation, you just foul him. You take a yellow card.
Yeah, put the boot on the other foot, and I guarantee you Rotherham have just got a tactical yellow card there. As Jensen Weir's fuming that he's been dragged down as he kicks off a massive counter-attack. Sometimes something that I guess you can maybe put it down to a lack of understanding of the sort of dark side of the game, if you like. Weir tried it. I suppose, if you want to look at it on kind of the other hand, the guy who actually breaks is absolutely rapid. And he covers so much ground in quite a short space of time. So there may well have been every intention in the world to just foul him, as cynical as that might sound, but they just couldn't.
which
is really frustrating.
He had a great game yesterday as well, that number 11. I thought he was a constant threat. So it's sort of maybe the frustration. So having watched it back, there's that phase of play, but then there's also obviously the ball goes out to our right-hand side, the United's right-hand side, and then comes back across. And there's just that. Am I being overly cynical, Tom, in saying that they've just got a little bit too much space to pick out the bottom corner there?
Yeah, maybe a bit. There was obviously a bit of a theme of this in sort of weeks gone by when Wigan scored the goal and Sunderland scored a goal against us. It were kind of identical in that the players had time and space to pick out a corner, basically. And like I've said, players at this level will punish you for that. And that's kind of what happened yesterday. I don't think it was as bad as those examples, because like, it's quite a tight space to play and sort of get it out of his feet and get a shot away. So I actually think, a little bit like the conversation of why have we just fouled the guy who sort of comes away, and maybe it's just credit to the player for basically being so quick. We can talk about giving the player time and space, but at the end of the day, he's managed to work a shot in a very tight space and basically pick out the bottom corner and give Mitov no chance. And maybe it's just a case that's just a very, very good finish, and that, again, can happen at this level. And it doesn't have to be the case. It's terrible defending. You give them loads and loads of time. Sometimes it's just that little bit, that sort of 5% extra time on the ball, and they can do that.
Let's wrap up this Rotherham chat just with one last question that I'm going to ask you both. It's interesting to see what both managers had to say after the game, I thought. So Warren, the Rotherham manager, the quote from his presser is, Cambridge are one of the hardest competitors we've played all season. And Bonner's was, performances like this will quickly translate into points. So it's quite a sort of open-ended question. I'll start with you, Casper. But like, at what point do we sort of actually turn this hard work into points? Is there, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a month in your head or something, but it's all well and good learning. But at some point, we do need to turn hard work into some actual points, no?
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand the viewpoint, but I do agree with Bonds here. I just think keep playing like that, the calibre of the opposition we're going to be playing is going to decrease. We just played probably the best team in the division, and we gave them a really good game. And with Charlton, I think we're going to see they're going to end up, in the playoffs. So I just think stick to what we're doing. You can't really take ownership necessarily of the outcome of the football match, but the players and the way we set up, we can take ownership of obviously how we approach the games. And this is a funny thing, right? So the goal we've conceded, we've committed a lot of bodies forward at that moment. So it's actually Digby who ultimately loses the ball. And we've got a lot of players high up the pitch. I think there's a fan base there. We need to decide what it is we actually want. Do you want United to go out and try and win that game at that point? The answer is probably yes. That obviously takes getting bodies forward. And having committed so many men forward, allowed their counter-attack to sort of come back through us. But, I think if we keep performing like that, I think we will pick up points. I think we've had an extremely hard run of games, the hardest run of the whole season. And Cheltenham was arguably the easiest game in amongst all of that. And it was an absolute riot. So I think we need to hold our nerve as a collective set of people. And that Doncaster home game is obviously pretty big. And then there's some pretty big ones in January that we need to be, we need to be really competitive. My big concern was that this hard run of games would maybe knock our confidence, but I haven't seen that at all. I think we're still playing with a lot of courageousness, as I say. So I feel pretty positive, actually, even after this really hard run of games. I think it's 7 losses in 9. looks bad on paper, but when you look at all of those games, genuinely, you think we could have got something out pretty much all those games, except obviously MK. And if you take more points, a few more points from those games, then suddenly we'd be well clear of relegation. So it's been a hard run of weeks, but I feel pretty positive, and I think we're going to get some good results in January.
Tom, where do you stand? Are you feeling confident, positive, or do you think there's still a bit more that needs to be done to actually turn them into points?
Yeah, I mean, I think January is crucial, and the business that we do in that month is, you know, I guess like for a lot of clubs, you know, throughout the pyramid, it's kind of going to determine how the rest of our season goes. I think there's a few bits of business to be done, and if we can do that, then clearly that gives us confidence going forward. But just to pick up on something that Casper said there, just kind of at the end about the confidence of the team, it's kind of a bit counterintuitive, but actually the team's grown in confidence like a lot, like visibly, over this run of games. And I'm not sure if it's just because of the sort of nature of what League One is in terms of the sort of teams and clubs that are in it. And, you know, we talked at the start of the season, probably like 14 teams who will realistically think they should be in the playoffs. So there's going to be tough games sort of threaded throughout the season. But I don't know if there's any teams this season, sort of elsewhere in the division, who will have gone on such a run of games where you literally play all the good teams in the space of about 2 months. That could and probably should really take its toll on the team in terms of confidence, in terms of injuries, kind of all this sort of stuff. The injuries are caught up with us a little bit, but the confidence of the team just seems to be going from strength to strength at the moment, which is not something that you'd expect. The team is pretty much lost nearly every game that they've played in the league over the last sort of 8 to 10 weeks. I guess part of that will just be that they're using the experience very well, and they're you know, kind of learning from it. But yeah, I think we've seen enough from this team to have some confidence that we can at least survive, which, you know, at the start of the season, to be honest, I wasn't sure what sort of state we'd be in come the January transfer window. To say that not only are we probably not going to be in the relegation zone at all, we've got a real opportunity to bring in 3 or 4 bodies to really kind of get us over that line, hopefully in something resembling comfortable fashion. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, well, January we'll come on to in a short while. But before we do, they don't get much easier the next game, Wickham away on Boxing Day. And to preview it, I had a chat with the Wickham Way podcast. So I'm joined by George from the Wickham Way here. Thanks very much for joining Under the Abbey Stand this week, mate. Just to start off with quite a general question, obviously you're back in League One this season. Having had a year in the Championship, which unfortunately you missed, which I'm sure you're quite gutted about. But how are you finding life in League One this season? How are you feeling about the season so far?
I think it's better than what we expected, really. I think some of us were expecting a hangover of sorts from the Championship season. The way we went down was, I suppose, quite dramatic after the Derby news emerged. I mean, yeah, over 46 games last season, we weren't good enough. But sort of when the news came out about Derby sort of filling with a rule book, you felt a little bit hard done by. But coming down this season, I think everyone expected to sort of be up there in and around the playoffs. At the start of the season, I would have snapped around off for second by Christmas. So overall, I think everyone's happy. Not really many, you know, bad memories of last season.
Yeah,
I think everyone's sort of happy with where we are. And looking forward to a promotion push in the second half, definitely.
So is the expectation to push for that sort of automatic spot, one of those spots? Or is it more of just playoffs and go from there?
I think back in the summer, it was probably just playoffs. Sort of avoid the hangover, like I said, of coming back down. I think it was sort of aim for playoffs. If you get anywhere higher than that, fine, perfect. But I think obviously, yeah, being second at Christmas, I think we've had a few injuries as well this season. Missing a few games here or there. The squad's in a much better place because of last season. It's tenfold better than the squad we had when we went up a few years ago. So I think, yeah, for that last season, really done us well. Yeah, going forward into the second half of the season, I think we have to be aiming for the automatic place. You know, I think they're stronger teams who will pull it forward, I think, in the second half, but definitely sort of second we can manage and we should be 100% getting a playoff place.
It's a tough old league this season, isn't it? You mentioned how how your squad's better this time round than it was last time you got promoted from League One. What sort of, who are the players that we should be watching out for on Boxing Day?
Well, I mean, take the front three, for example. Sam Vokes, he's done it on the Euro stage in the Premier League for many, many years.
Yeah.
Gareth McCleary as well, with Reading, Championship, Premier League experience. He's a real quality player at this level.
Yeah.
And you know, the other side of them too, Daryl Horgan, Ireland international, still playing for them as well. We've got Brandon Hanlon, signed in from Bristol Rovers in the summer. I think it's been a surprise acquisition. He's been really, really good, really promising for us. And all over the park, I think there's a lot of Championship quality players now who sort of 2-3 years ago we'd have had no chance of signing. All over the park, there's quality there. Yeah, we're relying on those extra Championship players to really fire us forward.
It's also, you know, Cambridge Wickham is a fixture that we're both well acquainted with. It's not it's definitely not the first time that we've faced off against each other. And for Cambridge fans listening, they know Gareth Ainsworth all too well. Has anything changed since the last time we've played each other, or is it the same sort of style that you're playing now?
I think we've come along the long ball when it's needed. I think, you know, last season we couldn't get away with it at all. We were still playing Akin Fenwick, 30 years old in the Championship. You know, and as big or strong as he is, when you've got the experienced defenders come up against him, and now how to deal with that. So I think we've had to resort to a more stylish style of play, I suppose. There's a lot more passing and moving, which is more pleasing to the eye. Much better for both sets of fans than watching the ball up in the air for 90 minutes. But yeah, I mean, when it's needed, the long ball option is there. Yeah, I can confirm. I don't know if you saw it. Came off the bench at the weekend and scored a cracking goal.
I was just about to ask you about that. I was going to say, I mean, he's still doing bits, isn't he? 38 years old. I mean, we've got a 39-year-old ourselves who's still doing bits in Wes Houlihan. So it'd be interesting to see very different sort of players. But Akinfenwa was still the business.
Yeah, I think it's 50th goal for Wickham. I think it might have just been league action. But his first goal outside the box.
Yeah, so amazing.
That's a good indication of the football we've played over the past 4 or 5 years. But yeah, I mean, yeah, the Route 1 style of play is still there if needed, but it's definitely a much more fluid attacker style of play we've adopted now.
So considering how sort of tough, you know, that there's so many teams going for the automatics and all with their own different qualities, do you think this game, Boxing Day at home to a relegation candidate like ourselves, will be something that your fans will expect 3 points from?
Respectively, I think it should be. Especially with the games you've got coming up over Christmas. After the Boxing Day game, you've got Ipswich away, then Charlton at home, and I think it's Sunderland and Portsmouth in the space, those four games. So I think we should be looking for points, not only Boxing Day, but this weekend as well. I think we should be taking 6 points there, really, and take us a good momentum into the real festive fixtures.
And if Mark Bonner, the Cambridge manager, was doing a scout report, what would be the one part of your team that he should be targeting if we're going to get anything from the game? Is there sort of a weak area in your opinion?
I suppose there isn't. It's a difficult one. We've got a few players out with illness, which could affect our own starting lineup. We've conceded a few sloppy goals in recent weeks, especially on the counter attacks. You know, our fullbacks like to really push forward, and we've had to play fullbacks and centre back in recent weeks. They've sort of got a bit of a nosebleed, run forward a little bit, and then teams have hit us on the break.
Yeah,
happened on Saturday against Wimbledon. Some two counter attacks. They could have had three or four as well. But I think as well, I wouldn't look too much into the long ball style of play. As we've mentioned, I think a few managers have done that this season, where they've sort of set their team up quite deep to deal with the area balls, and we haven't played that style of football, which has caught them out. So yeah, I think sort of if they were to set up to counter-attack a little bit, but then not sit too deep to rely on their counter-attacks, because we found a way to break teams down this season, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, I'll let them know. Just as a final one, if you had to stick your neck out there, get a prediction for the game, what would you say?
It's a tricky one. I mean, I don't think our record's been too good on Boxing Day over the years. seems to be some sort of curse in place. I'll be happy with 3 points. I'll take a scrappy 1-0. We haven't been scoring too freely in recent weeks as well. I think Cambridge will pose a threat. I think you'll get some goals. So I'm going to go for a classic Wickham score of 3-2.
3-2. Yeah. Well, we're specialists at the 2-2 draw this season, so here's hoping that we can restrict you to that. Thanks very much for joining us, George, and best of luck.
No problem.
For the season.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much to the guys from the Wickham Way podcast there for giving us their time and helping to preview the game. Before we get into talking about this Boxing Day, I set both Tom and Matt a little question before recording, which was just to give us their most memorable Boxing Day game they can remember. So Caswell, I'll start with you. When I say most memorable, I mean good or bad, just one that sticks out in your head as a Boxing Day game.
It's, to be honest, a question that filled me with dread, because the moment you put it to me, all I could think of was Histon, Stevenage, Braintree, and it's this weird set of obviously like local fixtures that we've played on those days. And none of those memories were great, and I couldn't remember half. And I think when Tom comes to his, because he's got a slightly shorter lifespan than me as a United fan, I think he's going to have, I'm very interested to see what he conjures up. Mine is, I had to dust off the almanac for this one. Mine goes a long way back. It's actually my first Boxing Day game with Cambridge. And it was a 1-1 home draw against Southend. I was so sure in my head that we won that game, but apparently not. But the nice thing for me about the Boxing Day games is, for some reason, I've never learned to drive and I've never had a car. So my poor dad has to come to every Boxing Day game simply to get me from A to B. And he is coming again on to Wickham. This 1-1 Southend game, I mean, Terry Fleming scored, which is quite a sort of a spectator's kind of item, a bit of a rare gem that. But also, to be fair, that was like my first proper Cambridge team, and it was just a really exciting team. It's someone like Shane Tudor, Dave Kitson, Omar Rietse, Tom Youngs, like properly great, really attacking Cambridge United team to watch under the lights in December. And I do just remember my brother actually came to that one as well. We stood up right down the front of the NRE off to the left. I think when you first go watch the games, the home games are themselves really exciting under the lights in winter. All of it's just really visceral. I was obviously 14 years old at the time. So, I can't say Boxing Day. I've got loads of great memories. The other thing is, the thing that really ages this is how long ago it was. Some of the other results from what was Nationwide Division 3 that day are unbelievable. So Boston beat York 3-0. Hull beat Hartlepool 2-0. Kidderminster beat Leighton Orient 3-2. Oxford beat Bournemouth 3-0. That's something. Scunthorpe and Rushden played out a 0-0 draw. Swansea lost at home against Bristol Rovers. So obviously showing my
age. Times have changed.
The times have changed. Yeah. Division 3 has changed a bit since then. But yeah, I think that's the one that stands out for me in amongst some properly forgettable games as well.
Well, Tom, remind us of one of those properly forgettable games, as I'm sure you will. What's your pick?
Yeah, I mean, well, first, I just want to say my commiserations to anyone who spent their Boxing Day 20 years ago watching Scunthorpe nil Rushden time of the film. What a terrible way to round off your Christmas. My God. Do you know what? Actually, I'm not going to lie. I thought Caswell was going to pinch mine when he said Histon. So we played Histon on Boxing Day in 2007, I think it was. I think it might have actually been the first time we played them in the league. Obviously, it was a bit of an unknown entity at that time, which obviously sort of over the years became quite an annoying fixture, to be honest. But it was a 1-0 win. Mark Brighton absolutely leathered one in from about 25 yards out. Packed Abbey, I think it's one of, sort of that time, it'd been one of our highest attendances for a long while. So that's the one that sort of immediately came to mind. But yeah, my head was sort of full of those weird conference doubleheader games against like Braintree and teams like that, which is never fun.
Anyway, let's move on to this year. Luckily, we're not going to Braintree for Boxing Day this year. But it doesn't get any easier in terms of opposition, having just played top of the league. Rotherham, it's Wickham, which I don't think is anyone's favourite fixture. Casper, are you expecting anything from this game? Or are you sort of happy to write it off?
It's not easy for a number of reasons, you know. One is there's no transport on Boxing Day, right? Mm. So this time my dad can't drive me to this game. And I am cycling from my house to Clapham, which is about 16 miles, changing at my mate's house. And then I'm taking an hour and a half on the tube to get to Amersham, which is like zone 9 of the tube, which I didn't know existed. And then getting picked up by my dad on the way. So it's hard for everyone, I think. It's definitely hard for United. But what I will say is this is, I looked at their sort of home form, Wickham, and it is pretty impressive. So they've only dropped 8 points at home in 11 games. But actually, I had this sense in my head. I was like, I bet they've only conceded like 6 goals at home. But actually, they've only kept 3 clean sheets at home in those 11 games. And we know that obviously United have got a pretty decent record on the road scoring goals. So that's given me a little bit of cause for a little bit of optimism to counterbalance that. The last time we won at Wickham was in 2001. I wasn't there. I don't remember it. It was a long time ago. It's not a happy hunting ground. I don't feel particularly positive historically. But I do know that we can go there and we can do something. And it's another game where, just like we've had in the last 8 weeks, we shouldn't go there with too much respect for Wickham. But we absolutely need to not go 1-0 down in that game. So I think at Wickham, that is of all the grounds in the country, that's probably the most terminal place to go 1-0 down ever. So, sort of cautious optimism, I guess.
And to sort of add to that cautious optimism, I think it was Wimbledon that managed to get a point there a couple of weeks ago, but they conceded a last minute equaliser as well. So, I mean, maybe that's an indication that they can be got at. Tom, there's a question for you. Obviously, we'll all know that Wickham under Ainsworth have had a very, should we call it a direct style of play and a bit of a physical threat, and they've got Sam Vokes as their sort of target man this season. Has obviously played at a much higher level than this. What do you think Bonner might change to sort of counteract that, or do you expect he'll go same team if possible?
There might be one or two changes, but I think it'll broadly be a pretty similar setup. I think Casper's absolutely right. You know, don't need to, you know, sort of pay them too much respect. I think if we can get past the antics that they always employ in these fixtures, and we can sort of compete physically with them, that's probably half the battle. We already know exactly how a Gareth Ainsworth team's going to play. They're horrible to play against. It's pretty grim football, to be honest. It served them well, so fair play. So, you know, sort of fair play to them over the last few years. I've not missed playing as Wickham at all. Whenever the games come up against them, it's just a horrible watch, like the horrible gimmicky football team. Quite a small club as well. I don't know if there's any more digs that I can get in at them just yet. Yeah. I think even though like in terms of the league table, they're obviously up there. And I guess it's expected given they came down from the Championship, didn't they, last season. I don't really view this as one like a Sunderland away or like a Wigan away or something, where I don't believe it's free hit territory. It's a tough game and it's a difficult one. It's not one that we should expect to get anything out of, but it's something that we can get something out of. Very much in the sort of Portsmouth away bracket for me rather than any of those others.
It's another one of these teams that, and there's about 14 in this league that think that they should get the playoffs minimum, right? That's their sort of expectation. And obviously they're sat fourth at the moment at the time of recording. So it's going to be tough, isn't it? Casper, prediction?
I'll say we'll go and get a hard-working point, a 1-1.
Tom?
I'm going to go positive. I want to say, yeah, we'll I think we'll nick a point in a 1-1 draw, but there'll be a lot of frustration about what happens on the pitch.
Love it. Love it. Well, obviously, look forward to that and hope to see a few of you there. Let's just, before wrapping everything up, I think this is probably the sort of, we've only got two more pods, this one and one more before the end of the season, end of the year, which obviously is the January transfer window. So I think this seems like quite a good time to sort of start talking about what we might like to see happen in January. Tom, just as a sort of general, very general, who do you think we should be targeting in terms of positions to help boost the squad?
I think a centre-back is important. And I think it needs to be quite an experienced centre-back. I think it's one thing that throughout the side, I think has kind of been crying out for at times, is just a bit of nous, a bit of sort of leadership. And part of that might be sort of by sort of leading by example in a way. So that'd be one area I'd be looking at. I'd maybe also be looking at a centre mid, someone who can sort of slot into that too. Behind Wes, behind May, whoever it is, he sort of starts in that number 10 role, if you like. And then because I'm a fan of a lower league football club, I'm of course going to say that we need a good striker who can put the ball in the back of the net, just like literally every other team in the football league, I think. So yeah, I mean, I think they're the key areas. I think, to be honest, the main thing is bring in some quality and some experience. I don't see us going out and spending loads of money and bringing in loads of permanent signings. I think it's a similar situation to the January transfer window last year. I think we're realistic enough to know that we're not sure what level we're going to be playing at. So it'd be silly to go out and sign a load of guys on, you know, big contracts and then up in League Two trying to shift them. So I think maybe we might see ourselves going in for some sort of loanees, maybe people who are sort of out of favour, sort of, you know, bigger League One clubs, maybe Championship clubs. That might be a good way to go. I also think maybe out wide we could do with some reinforcements, because we seem to lack options there whenever basically Shiloh Tracy's not fit. And that unfortunately has become quite a regular thing. So that may be another area as well to look at. I don't think it's certainly not a massive overhaul that's needed. I don't think that there's like surgery that needs to be done in the squad. I think it's just a bolstering of it sort of here and there. And that could really see us over the line.
Casper, sort of same question to you, but also probably a good place to just remember what we did last January, right? Which was four loanees, I think, unless I'm forgetting anyone, Agilis, Declan Drysdale, Tracy and Ocadina, if I'm not wrong. Can you see us doing something similar, just dipping into the loan market just to bolster the squad, as Tom says, or do you think it will be something a bit more sort of substantial, a bit more permanent?
No, I think Tom's right. I think we'll be leaning on the loan market. It seems like we've developed some really good relationships with some of the clubs higher up the pyramid, which could really suit us really well here. It's an interesting shopping list. It's very heavily influenced by players we already have in the squad who aren't fit. So everyone says we need an experienced centre-back. We've got one. He just hasn't been able to play for us all season. His name's Greg Taylor. And he really shores things up for us. It's, again, why he wouldn't sign someone on a permanent necessarily. The next thing on my list in terms of priority would be that holding midfielder. The reason for that, again, taps back to the Wes thing we were talking about earlier, allows Adam May to be higher up the pitch and not have to worry about being in that pivot. And again, we've got one of these. He's just crocked. His name's Liam O'Neill. And then you talk about right winger, which makes complete sense. And again, we've got Lancaster. So, like, is he fit? Is he not fit? Is it right to sign another right winger? Will Lancaster suddenly then be more fit and more available? Yeah, it kind of runs all the way through. I think the one thing that Tom didn't mention there, we can tell from what Bonner said that we're not going to have this massive overhaul, and I don't think we're going to see this really big influx of players either. But one thing I think I would like to see is for us to sign a more experienced senior goalkeeper. And this isn't necessarily to move Mitov, you know, this isn't about a challenge to Mitov, but this is about applying a bit of pressure to Mitov. And also just having a bit more experience around the goalkeeping unit that we have. I don't think that necessarily will be Thomas Holy, but maybe it will based on what he was saying at the end of his very short spell that he had with us. But just think for us, it makes me nervous what we have on the bench at the moment in terms of goalkeepers. And the fact that we had to sign Holy or decided to sign Holy instead of playing our reserve keeper, I would identify that as a weakness. I don't think we will do it necessarily, but I think that would certainly be on my mind. If this is Football Manager and you're trying to mash all of your budget, which everyone I'm sure did every transfer window, then I'm signing five or six players, of which one is a sort of experienced senior goalkeeper as well.
And I think it's interesting with the transfer market, because Bono has said openly, and it's obvious that he likes small squads, right? He likes working with small, tight-knit groups of players. So, yeah, I wonder. I'm quite fascinated to see what we end up doing. I'm sure we'll do something, a little bit of work. But, yeah, feel free to tweet us if you're listening and you've got an opinion on anything that we said. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you got a lot of disagreeing with Tom and Matt over the last hour.
What a day.
But do tweet us at abbeystandpod or abbeystandpod@gmail.com is the email address. Let us know your Boxing Day stories as well. There'll be a pod out on the 27th after the Wickham game. Lineup TBC, but I'm sure Tom will be there. So thanks very much for this, Tom.
Yeah, I've got a ticket for Wickham, but I have no way of getting there. So if anyone can fit a little one in the car, feel free to tweet in.
Do you know what, actually, that we can actually sweeten that deal, because I don't have a way of getting there either, neither does Jordan Warland. So if someone just wants to take UTAS to the game, do let us know. Casper, well done on your tricky second appearance, mate. I thought you've nailed it. Now you can sort of experiment with your third and fourth appearances after this.
That's it. It all goes a bit avant-garde after this, right? It gets a bit weird.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Cheers, boys. Merry Christmas.